reconciliation group to be set up. The Stormont House Agreement apparently also provides that recommendation for services for victims and survivors will include a mental trauma service. There's so much discussion, debate and conversation about it, but we never seem to be getting very far. Louise, what will those who are attending your conference be able to do? Because you've a long list of people, very few of them in any way associated with politics.
Yes, I think today's conference is significant because it does bring together a wide section of Northern Irish society who are interested in these issues. Among the people attending the conference are victims and survivors, civil society organisations, lawyers, policymakers and academics. And I think it's important to us to have these sort of meetings because they provide a space for some sort of public conversation and public debate around issues that are very significant for our society. And I think it's particularly important to have it now because the policymakers are moving towards quite an ambitious timetable to introduce legislation to implement the Stormont House, the past related proposals of the Stormont House Agreement. So they're hoping to have a draft by June and introduce legislation in the autumn. So this is an opportunity really for all those who are interested in these issues to have a debate, to have an idea of what should be in these proposals, what should be in the legislation, and to try and influence the types of draft legislation we'll see over the summer.
Do you reckon, can ordinary people influence them, or do you need to be someone like a professor who's a director of the Ulster University Transitional Justice Institute, or indeed you or your colleague Professor Rory O'Connell or Professor Brandon Hamber, a director of the Ulster University's International Conflict Research Institute, or Patrick Corrigan, who's on this programme very often from Amnesty International, or the likes of Dr. Anna Bryson, research fellow from the Queen's University here in Belfast. It's a long list of people like that who may be open to the accusation that even they are slightly divorced from the ordinary Joes and Josephines.
I guess that could be the case. I mean, among academics, we are a broad group. You know, we all have different interests and different lives and different levels of engagement with Northern Irish society. So I think our potential to influence policymakers might depend on our expertise and how much time we spend working on these issues. And similarly to local NGOs who spend every day grappling at the coalface of these issues, that's why they have the potential to be able to talk to people from a knowledgeable position. But that's not to say that others cannot. We have quite an experience here in Northern Ireland of having broad consultation processes on the past. We had the consultative group in the past. We had the Sullivan process, as you mentioned. And in each of those occasions, ordinary people were able to submit their views and have their voices heard. And I think in many cases, politicians might be receptive to that, particularly when it comes to the voices of victims and survivors.
Are you hopeful generally about the Stormont House Agreement?
Yes, I believe I am. This agreement is important in terms of the past because it's the first time in Northern Ireland we have had all our political parties come together and reach an agreement on the past. And it's the first time we have a comprehensive approach proposed. Obviously, the agreement is quite brief in terms of how it describes the new institutions. It's a total of 5 pages to cover all the institutions that you mentioned. So a lot of the detail of how these mechanisms work in practice is going to come with the legislation. But I'm hopeful that we will see important contributions being made to our debates through the work of the institutions provided for in the Stormont House Agreement.
You don't see it floundering as a result of all the other arguments that they're having on welfare reform and the myriad of other hurdles that sometimes seem difficult to jump.
Well, I'm hopeful. That doesn't mean I'm absolutely certain it's going to work out. I guess there are many things that our politicians here are going to be grappling with in the coming months, and it's not clear in the terms of the agreement itself how the past is related to the other aspects of the agreement on welfare or institutional reform, for example.
And you're discussing this all day today, is that right?
Yes, we will be. I think we're having different sessions relating to each of the different institutions that's proposed. So this morning we'll be talking about the Historical Investigations Unit and then the Independent Commission for Information Retrieval, and this afternoon we'll turn to the Oral History Archive. So there's quite a lot of detail and uncertainty about how these mechanisms will be implemented in practice. So that's why we're going to have quite a focused discussion on each of them.
Okay, important discussion. Professor, thanks for your time this morning. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Professor Louise Melender from the University of Ulster, or Ulster University as it is now called.